Chapter 13. There was a love once, I shaped it with my hands, until in its forms I saw sunlight and streams and earthy verges sweet with grass. It fit easily into my pack and made peaceful the years of wandering through forests in retreat and down the river's tragic flow. On the day we broke upon the shore of a distant land, I fled cold and bereft, fighting curtains of ash up through the snows of the pass. In the heaps of spoil among an enemy victorious, my love floundered in the cracked company of kin, broken down blow upon blow. And now, as my days lower into the sleep of regret, I dream of fresh clay finding these old hands where the wind sings of love. Forests in Retreat, Fisher Keltath. The passage of thousands of hobnailed boots had worn through the thin grasses, lifting into the air vast clouds of dust. The breeze had fallen off, and coming down from the north, tracked the columns at virtually the same turgid pace, blinding them to the world. The horses were growing gaunt, their heads hanging, their eyes dull. When Aranecht turned her mount to follow Bryce, the beast felt sluggish beneath her, slow to canter. They rode out to the west side of the marching troops and made their way back down the line's ragged length. Dusty faces lifted here and there to watch them pass, but mostly the soldiers kept their gazes on the ground before them, too weary to answer any stir of curiosity. She knew how they felt. She had done her share of plodding on foot, although without the added burden of a pack heavy with armor and weapons. They had marched hard to draw up close to the Balkando Evertine Legion, who in turn had already fallen a third of a day behind the Perish. Shield Anvil Tanakalian was, if anything, proving harsher than Krughava in driving the Grey Helms. Their pace was punishing, sparing no thought for their putative allies. Bryce was worried, and so was Queen Abrastel. Was this nothing more than the lust for glory, the fierce zeal of fanatics? Or was something more unpleasant at work here? Aranecht had her suspicions, but she was not yet willing to voice them, not even to Bryce. Tanakalian had not been pleased with the adjunct's insistence that Gessler take overall command. Perhaps he intended to make the position irrelevant, at least insofar as regards the Perish. But if so, why would he do that? They pulled free of the last block of wagons, and through the drifting dust they saw the rear guard, a dozen blue rose lancers, drawn up around three figures on foot. Aranecht rose in her saddle and looked westward. The Kachain Chemal were out there, she knew. Out of sight, yet still moving in parallel with the Lethary. She wondered when next Gessler, Stormy, and Calith would visit them. More arguments, more confusion thicker than these clouds of dust. She shook her head. Never mind all that. Since the morning, strangers had been tracking them, and they've just bitten our tail. Aranecht returned her attention to the three disheveled newcomers, two women and one man. They'd arrived with little evident gear or supplies, and as Aranecht drew closer, she could see their sorry state. But they were not wearing uniforms. Not Malazan deserters, then. Or worse, survivors. Bryce slowed his horse, glanced back at her, and seeing his relief, she nodded. He'd feared the same. But in some ways, she realized, this was even more disturbing, as if the bone hunters had truly vanished, their fate unknown and possibly unknowable, like ghosts. She had to struggle against thinking of them as being already dead. In her mind rose visions of hollowed eye sockets, withered skin splitting over bones. The image was horrifying, yet it haunted her. She could see the edge of the glass desert off to the east, heat shimmering in a wall, rising like a barrier beyond which the soil lost all life. They reined in. Bryce studied the three strangers for a moment and then said, "Welcome." The woman in the front turned her head and spoke to her comrades.
"Kesros Lathari Stiganthal, or Lest.
The other woman, short and plump, but with the blotchy, sagging cheeks that denoted dehydration, frowned and said,
Hegoran Stigdaru?
Erheden Ap, replied the first woman.
She was taller than the other one, with shoulder-length dark brown hair. She had the eyes of someone used to pain. Facing Bryce again, she said,
Lathari Erli? Are you Erli speak? Are you speak Lathari?
Lathari, Bryce corrected. The language of the First Empire.
First Empire,
the woman repeated, matching perfectly Bryce's intonation.
Slums, low-born stig, dialect, Erlitan.
The plump woman snapped.
Turulberus? Turulberus?
The first woman sighed.
Please, water?
Bryce gestured to the Preda commanding the lancers.
Give them something to drink. They're in a bad way.
Commander, our own supplies.
Do it, Preda. Three more in our army won't make much difference either way. And find a cutter. The sun has roasted them.
He nodded to the first woman.
I am Commander Bryce Bedict. We march to war, I'm afraid. You are welcome to travel with us for as long as you desire, but once we enter enemy territory, unless you remain with us, I cannot guarantee your safety.
Of course, he didn't call himself a prince, just a commander. Noble titles still sat uneasily with him. The woman was slowly nodding.
You march south.
For now, he replied.
And then?
East. She turned to the other woman.
Gesra Illit.
Illit? Call Mestra Al-Ahamd.
The woman faced Bryce.
I named Faint. We go with you, too. Please, Illit, east.
Aranect cleared her throat. The inside of her mouth was stinging, had been for days. She was itchy beneath her soiled garments. She spent a moment lighting a stick of rust leaf, knowing that Bryce had twisted in his saddle and was now observing her. Through a brief veil of smoke, she met his eyes and said,
The younger one's a mage. The man, there's something odd about him, as if he's only in the guise of a human, but it's a guise that is partly torn away. Behind it,
she shrugged, drawing her stick,
like a wolf pretending to sleep, he has iron in his hands.
Bryce glanced over, frowned.
In the bones, she amended, he could probably punch his way through a keep wall.
Iron, Etrisida? Are you sure? How can that be?
I don't know. I might even be wrong, but you can see he carries no weapons, and those knuckles are badly scarred. There's a taint of the demonic about him.
She cut herself off, as Faint was now speaking quickly to the young mage.
Head hen up, Vilnen. Ulstigatrisida. Sida geskeralu. Ust kelanvarad harado unani. Thekel edu.
Eyes fixed on Aranect, and everyone was silent for a moment. With narrowed gaze, the young sorceress addressed Faint.
Kelanvarad. Vap geruli mest.
Whatever she'd said did not seem to warrant a reply from Faint, who now spoke to Aranect.
We are lost. Seek holds. Way home. Darutistan. Do you, Karal? Caster magic? Kelanvarad? High mage?
Aranect glanced at Bryce, who now answered her earlier shrug with one of his own. She was silent for a moment, thinking, and then she said,
Yes, Faint. Atrisida, High Mage. I am named Aranict.
She cocked her head and asked,
The Lethary you speak, it is high diction, is it not? Where did you learn it?
Faint shook her head.
City, seven cities, early town, low-born tongue in slums. You speak like whore.
Aranict pulled hard on her rust leaf and then smiled.
This should be fun.
The ghost of sweetest sufferance held up her clay pipe, squinted at the curls of smoke rising from it.
See that, Faint? That's the perfect breath of every life-giving god there ever was. Holier than incense. Why, if priests filled their braziers with rust leaf, the temples would be packed. Worshippers like salted fish in a barrel. Worshippers? Faint snorted. Addicts, you mean? Variations on a theme, darling. You've stopped wincing with every breath, I see.
Faint leaned back on the heap of blankets.
You heard, precious. That Aranect is tapping elder magic. And something else, too, she said. Newborn, she called it. What in Hood's name is that supposed to mean? I don't care. All I know is I've stopped aching everywhere. Me too.
Sweetest puffed contentedly for a time and then said,
They were nervous round Ambi, though, weren't they?
She glanced over at the silent man where he sat close to the tent's entrance.
Like they never seen a bowl before, right, Ambi?
The man gave no sign of having heard her, which Faint found something of a relief.
He must think I've gone mad, having a one-way conversation like this. Then again, he might be right. Something snapped in me, I suppose.
Sweetest Sufferance rolled her eyes at Faint.
Did you see the tack on that commander's horse?
Faint asked in a low voice.
A different rig from what the Lancers had. The setup was different, I mean. That overtug inside the horn, the stirrup angle. What are you going on about, Faint? The prince's horse, idiot. He had his tack worked in the Malazan style.
Sweetest Sufferance frowned at Faint.
Coincidence?
She waved a hand.
Sorry, pretend I didn't say that. So, that is strange, isn't it? Can't think the Malazans ever got this far, but maybe they did. Oh, well, they must have, since you saw what you saw. Your head's spinning, isn't it? I might crawl out and throw up soon, she replied. Ambi, don't be blocking that flap, right? Now, Malazan tack, what do you think that means?
If Precious and Aranict can work out a way of talking to each other, we might find out.
We ever use the holds, Faint? Not on purpose. No, Master Quell had some stories, though. The early days, when things were a lot wilder than what we go through, when they didn't know how to control or even pick their gates. Every now and then, one of the carriages would plunge into some world nobody even knew existed. Got into lots of trouble, too. Quell once told me about one realm where there was virtually no magic at all. The shareholders who ended up there had a hood's hole of a time getting back.
Yeah, we had it easy, didn't we?
Until our master got eviscerated, yes, sweetie.
You know, I doubt Precious is going to get much that's useful from that high mage.
Why do you say that?
Sweetest shrugged.
It's not like we got anything to offer them, is it? Not like we can bargain or make a deal.
Sure we can. Get us back home and the Trigal will offer them a free delivery. Anything, anywhere.
You think so? Why, I can't think we're that important, Faint.
You ain't read all the articles, have you? If we're in trouble, we can bargain with the full backing of the guild, and they will honour those bargains to the letter.
Really? Well, now, they know how to take care of their shareholders. I'm impressed.
You have to hand it to them, Faint agreed. I mean, excepting when we're torn off the carriage on a run and left behind to get ripped apart and eaten, or cut down in a deal that goes sour, or we run up a whopping tab in the local pit, or some alien disease takes us down, or we lose a limb or three, get head bash-addled, or...
Giant lizards drop out of the sky and kill us, yes. Be quiet, Faint. You're not helping things at all.
What I'm doing, Faint said, closing her eyes, is trying not to think about those runts and the hag that took them.
It's not like they were shareholders, dearie. Ah, now that's my sweetest.
True enough. Still, we got stretched out plain to see that day, sweetest, and the rack's tightening still. At least in my mind. I just don't feel good about it.
Think I'll head out and throw up now,
Sweetest said. Slipping past Ambi was easy, Faint saw, for a ghost. Precious Thimble rubbed at her face, which had gone slightly numb.
How are you doing this?
she asked. You're pushing words into my head.
The empty hold is awake once more, Aranicht replied. It is the hold of the unseen, the realms of the mind. Perception, knowledge, illusion, delusion. Faith, despair, curiosity, fear. Its weapon is the false belief in chance, in random fate.
Precious was shaking her head.
Listen, chance is real. You can't say it isn't. And mischance, too. You said your army got caught in a fight nobody was looking for. What was that?
I dread to think, Aranicht replied, but I assure you it was not blind chance. In any case, your vocabulary has improved dramatically. Your comprehension is sound.
So you can stop shoving stuff in, right?
Aranicht nodded.
Drink. Rest now.
I have too many questions for that, Atreseda. Why is the hold empty?
Because it is home to all which cannot be possessed, cannot be owned. And so too is the throne within the hold empty, left eternally vacant. Because the very nature of rule is itself an illusion, a conceit and the product of a grand conspiracy. To have a ruler, one must choose to be ruled over. And that forces notions of inequity to the fore, until they become, well, formalized. Made central to education, made essential as a binding force in society, until everything exists to prop up those in power. The empty throne reminds us of all that. Well, some of us, anyway.
Precious Thimble frowned.
What did you mean when you said the hold was awake once more?
The wastelands are so called because they are damaged.
I know that. I can't do a damned thing here.
Nor could I, until recently.
The Atreseda plucked out a stick of rolled rust leaf and quickly lit it. Smoke thickened the air in the tent.
Imagine a house burning down, she said, leaving nothing but heaps of ash. That's what happened to magic in the wastelands. Will it ever come back? Ever heal? Maybe that's what we're seeing here. But the power doesn't just show up. It grows. And I think now it has to start in a certain way, beginning with wandering. And then come the holds, like plants taking root.
Aranicht gestured.
Much wandering in these wastelands of late, yes? Powerful forces, so much violence, so much will.
And from holds to warrens, muttered Precious,
nodding to herself.
Ah, the Malazans speak of this too. These warrens. If they are destined to appear here, they have yet to do so, Precious Thimble. And is there not concern that they are ill?
Elithans, Precious hissed. You'd think they invented warrens the way they go on.
Things got sickly for a time, sure, but then that went away.
The holds have always been the source of magical power on this continent, Aranicht said, shrugging. In many ways, we Lethary are very conservative, but I'm beginning to think there are other reasons for why there has been no change here. The Kachain Chimal remain, and the Fokral Asael dominate the lands to the east. Even the creatures known as the T'lani Mas are among us now, and without question the hold of ice is in the ascendant, meaning the Jaggard have returned.
She shook her head.
The Malazans speak of war among the gods. I fear that what is coming will prove more terrible than any of us can imagine.
Precious licked her lips, glanced away. The tent seemed to have closed round her, like a death shroud being drawn tight. She shivered.
We just want to go home.
I do not know how I can help you, Aranicht said. The holds are not realms one willingly travels through. Even drawing upon their power invites chaos and madness. They are places of treachery, of deadly traps and pits leading down into unknown realms. Worse, the more powerful rituals demand blood.
Precious gathered herself, met the Atreseda's gaze.
In the east, she said, something's there, I can feel it. A thing of vast power.
Yes, Aranicht said, nodding.
It is where you are going, isn't it? This army and the war to come. You are going to fight for that power, to take it for yourself.
Not quite, Precious Thimble. That power, we mean to set it free.
And if you do, what happens then?
We don't know.
You keep speaking of the Malazans. Are they here?
Are they one of the armies marching to this war?
Aranicht seemed about to say one thing, then changed her mind and said,
Yes.
Precious sat back on her haunches.
I am from One-Eye Cat, a city of Jenabakis. We were conquered by the Malazans. Winning is all that matters to them, Atreseda. They will lie, they will backstab. Whatever you see on the surface, don't believe it. Don't. With them, nothing is as it seems, not ever.
They are a complicated people,
Precious snorted. Their first emperor was where it all started. The sleight of hand, the deadly misdirection, everything the Malazan Empire became infamous for started with him. And though he's now dead and gone, nothing has changed. Tell your commander, Aranicht, tell him. The Malazans, they'll betray you. They'll betray you.
Bryce glanced up as she entered the tent.
You were able to speak to her?
I was, after some curious work. It's as I said, the power of the holds ever grows. I was never before able to manipulate the empty hold the way I did this night. In fact,
she settled down on the bed mat, started pulling off her boots.
I don't feel very good about what I had to do. By the time I was done, not even her innermost thoughts were hidden from me. I feel sullied.
He moved closer, slipped an arm round her. Was there no other way?
I don't know. Maybe. But this was the quickest. She had some interesting opinions on the Malazans.
Oh?
Doesn't trust them. Her people didn't fare well during the Malazan conquest of Jenabakis. Yet for all that resentment, a part of her recognizes that some good came of it in the end. The enforcement of laws and justice and so on. Hasn't dulled her hatred, though.
Trust, Bryce mused. Always a difficult issue.
Well, Aranicht said, Tavaray is hiding something.
I believe what she is hiding is her awareness of just how wretched her chances are, Aranicht.
But that's just it, Aranicht said. From what I gleaned from Precious Thimble, the Malazans never do something at which they're likely to fail.
So if Tavaray's chances look as bad as we all seem to think, what are we missing? Now that is an interesting question, Bryce admitted.
Anyway, Aranicht said, they'll be coming with us to Colance.
Very well. Can we trust them? Aranicht settled back on the mat with a heavy sigh.
No.
Ah, will that prove a problem?
I doubt it. If Precious Thimble attempts to draw upon a hold, she'll get her head ripped off by all that raw power. Too young and doesn't know what she's doing.
Could such a personal disaster put anyone else at risk?
It could, Bryce. Good thing you brought me along, isn't it?
He lay down beside her. Whatever happened to the shy, nervous woman I made my Atreseda?
You seduced her, you fool.
Aranicht, push!
She sank down onto her knees, head hanging, her breath coming in gasps. Spax drew up his leggings, stepped away from where she knelt close to the tent's back wall.
Best dessert there is, he said. Better run off now. I have to see your mother, and if she catches a glimpse of you anywhere near here, she'll know.
What if she does? Spoltatha snapped. It's not as if she's opened her legs to you, is it?
He snorted.
Like a royal vault, she is.
You're not good-looking enough, and you smell.
I smell like a gilk white-faced Bargast woman, and you've hardly complained.
She rose, straightening her tunic.
I am now.
Your mother is growing ever more protective of her daughters, he said, scratching with both hands at his beard. Spirits below! This dust gets everywhere!
Spoltatha slipped past him without another word. He watched her head off into the night, and then made his way round the royal train's equipment tent. Opposite waited the queen's tent, two guards stationed out front.
Is she ready for me?
Spax asked as he approached.
Too late for that, one replied, and the other grunted a laugh.
They stepped clear to allow him passage. He went inside and then through to the inner chamber. "Can she walk, Highness?" Abrustal drank down the last of her wine, lifted up the goblet. "My third in a row. I'm not looking forward to this, and having to listen to one of my own daughters squeal like a Myriad with a herder's hand up its arse has hardly improved my mood."
"She's untutored in the ways of real men," Spax responded. "Where do you want me for this?"
Abrustal gestured to one side of the tent. "There, weapons drawn." The war chief raised his brows, but said nothing as he walked over to where she had indicated. "This will be a kind of gate," Abrustal said, folding her legs as she settled back in her chair. "Things could come through, and to make matters worse, it'll be hard to make out what we're seeing. There will be a veil between us. If the situation sours, it can be torn, either by whatever is on the other side or by you going through."
"Going through? Highness,
be quiet. You are in my employ, and you will do what you're told."
"Swamp shit. We really did put her in a foul mood. Oh, well."
He drew his long knives and crouched down.
"If I'd known, I would have brought my axes."
"What do your shamans tell you, Spex, about your Bargast gods?" He blinked.
"Why, nothing, Firehair. Why should they? I'm the war chief. I deal in matters of war. All that other rubbish is for them to worry over."
"And are they?"
"Are they what?"
"Worried."
"They're warlocks. They're always worried."
"Spex?" He grimaced.
"The Bargast gods are idiots. Like 16 children locked in a small room for days. They'll start eating each other next."
"So there are 16 of them?"
"What? No, that was just the number I threw out. Spirits below Firehair, you keep taking me literally. I'm Spax, remember? I make things up to entertain myself. You want me to talk about my gods? Well, they're worse than me. They probably made themselves up."
"What do your shamans say?" Spax scowled.
"I don't care what they say."
"Is it that bad?" He shrugged.
"Could be our gods suddenly get smart. Could be they realize that their best chance of surviving what's to come is to keep their heads down. Could be they can cure the world's ills with one sweet kiss, too."
He held up his knives.
"But I ain't holding my breath."
"Don't pray to them, Spex. Not tonight, not now. Do you understand me?"
"I can't even remember the last time I prayed to them, Highness."
Abrustal poured herself another goblet of wine. "Grab those furs over there. You'll need them."
"Furs? Firehair, I..."
A stain darkened the space in the center of the chamber, and an instant later, bitter cold air spilled out, frosting everything in sight. The war chief's lungs burned with every breath. Pottery stacked against one wall cracked, then shattered, and what it contained fell out in frozen lumps. Through pained eyes, Spax saw shapes take form within the jellied stain. In the forefront, facing Abrustal, was a short, curvaceous woman. Young, he thought, though it was difficult to be sure.
"Falash, is that her?" "Yes, must be her. Who else would it be?"
Upon her left stood a taller woman, though the only detail he could make out was what appeared to be a glittering diamond set in her brow, from which extraordinary colours now flowed. Then a shape coalesced to the 14th daughter's right. Unnaturally tall, dressed in black, the hint of chain armour beneath the slashed cloak. A hood was drawn back, revealing a gaunt, demonic face. Stained tusks rose from the lower jaw, thrusting outward like curved knives. The pits of its eyes were dark.
"A damned Jaggart, leaving me to wonder just how many more of my childhood terrors are real."
The Jaggart seemed to study Abrustal for a time, and then the head turned and Spax found himself staring into those lifeless pits. Withered lips peeled back, and the apparition spoke. "Bargast," voiced as if it was an insult. Spax growled a low curse, said, "I am Gilk. We have many enemies, all of whom fear us. You are welcome to be one of them, Jagat."
"Mother," said the daughter, "I see you are well."
Abrastol tipped her goblet. A solid lump of wine fell out. "Is this really necessary? I think I am frozen to my chair."
"Omtos Felak, mother. The hold's ancient king has returned. He stands beside me."
"He's dead." The Jagat faced the queen again.
"I have heard better insults from my pets, mortal."
He then pointed at Spax.
"Speaking of pets, what do you intend to do with yours?"
"A precaution," Abrastol said, shrugging. The other woman, the one Spax did not know, then spoke.
"Highness, only a few days ago this Jagat here bit off the face of a Forkral assail."
She edged a step back to take in the Bargast.
"Do not clash those blades, warrior. They will shatter."
Falash said,
"Mother, we have found a new ally in our endeavors. The king of the Hold of Ice now stands with us."
"Why?" the other woman said.
"I don't think they like the Forkral assail, Highness."
"You must be Captain Shurk Elal," the queen said. "I have heard interesting things about you, but that will have to wait until another time. 14th daughter, are you once again upon the seas?"
"We are, on a ship of the dead."
"You think you're cold?"
One hand fluttered.
"We're less than 2 weeks from the teeth."
"What of the Perish fleet?"
Falash shook her head.
"No sign. We must assume they have arrived, whether a blockade now exists."
She shrugged.
"Mother, be careful. The Forkral assail know we are coming. All of us. They know."
"Can we maintain this line of communication?"
"Not much longer," Falash replied. "Once we draw closer to the assail's domain, their hold will dominate."
Spax snorted.
"Even against the king of the Hold of Ice? Now, how pathetic is that?"
The Jagat faced him once more.
"When Draconis stepped onto this world, he missed a few of your kind underfoot. He has grown careless in his old age. When next you and I meet, Bargast, we shall have words on the matter."
"Have you a name, Jagat?" Spax asked. "I want to know who to cuss. I want the name of this miserable, rotting carcass I'm looking at right now."
The mouth stretched once more.
"Can you not guess, Bargast, as you squat shivering in my breath?"
Falash said, "Mother, are you sure you want to go on with this? Against the forces now gathering, we're nothing."
"I think," said Abrastol, "the time has come to be more forthright regarding our allies here in the Wastelands. We seem to have acquired a force of, well, lizards. Large, powerful, well-armed. They call themselves the Kachain Chimal, and they are commanded by 2 Malazans."
She stopped then, since the Jagat had begun laughing. The sound reached into Spax's bones until he felt them rattling like frozen sticks. His glare, fixed upon the Jagat, suddenly widened.
"His breath? But how? No, yes. See that cloak, see that cowl."
He straightened, chest swelling.
"I have never feared you," he said.
Hood ceased laughing, regarded the Bargast.
"Of course not, War Chief Spax of the Gilk. But then, once I am known to you, fear is irrelevant, isn't it?
Especially when you're already dead."
One long bony finger lifted into view, wagged at the war chief.
"Ah, but how would you know?"
Imagine dying and then finding yourself asking, what now? The day you stand on the wrong side of death, Spex, come and find me. And in the bitter truth of equals, you and I shall discuss real fear.
Hood laughed a second time. Moments later, all three apparitions were gone. A biting chill remained, mists roiling in the chamber. Queen Abrustal fixed Spax with a hard stare.
What was all that about, Warchief?
He scowled.
I don't for an instant doubt that captain's claim. Bit off an Asael's face, did he? I'm surprised it wasn't its whole damned head.
Spax fought off another shiver.
Too many swords in the fire, Highness. Things are going to break, badly.
Second thoughts?
More than I dare to count.
Breath gusted from his nostrils.
It's time to offer counsel, whether you like it or not. I know you are committed to this venture, and nothing I can say will dissuade you. We're about to wage war against the Fokral Asael.
He studied her with narrowed eyes.
You've wanted that for some time. I see the truth of that. But listen, there are times when a course decided upon gathers a power of its own. A momentum that sweeps us all along. Fireherr, this river we're on seems calm enough for now. But the current grows and grows, and soon, even if we seek the safety of shore, it will be too late.
A fine speech, Spex. The Gilk Warchief advises caution. So noted. Abruptly she rose. My 14th daughter is not one you could tumble behind the equipment tent. That said, I do not think she invited that undead Jaghut into our alliance. Rather, I suspect she had little say in the matter.
And the current grows bold.
She eyed him. Journey to the Lethary camp. Inform Prince Bryce of this turn of events.
Now?
Now.
What of the parish?
The queen frowned and then shook her head. I will not see one of our few fit horses run to death just to bring word to the Grey Helms. I don't know what they're trying to prove with that torrid pace.
I do.
Indeed. Very well, Spex. Let's hear it.
They seek to make us irrelevant, Fireherr. You, Bryce, and especially the Kachin Chemal.
They want the glory for themselves?
Shield and Viltanakalion,
he said, adding a disgusted grunt.
He's young, with too much to prove. But that is not what is bothering me, Highness. I no longer trust his motives. I cannot say if the goal he seeks is at all related to the adjuncts. These Grey Helms, they are the avatars of war. But it is not the war between peoples that they serve. It is the war of nature against humans.
Then he is a greater fool than we can even imagine, Abrustal said. He cannot win that war. Nature cannot win. It never could. Spax was silent for a moment, and then in a low voice he said,
I believe that it is the other way round, Highness. This is a war we cannot win. All of our victories are temporary. No, illusory. In the end, we lose, because even in winning, we still lose.
Abrustal walked from the chamber. Brows lifting, Spax followed her. Outside, under the green-lit night sky, past the two guards. She continued down the center aisle between the officers' tents, out past the kitchen camps, the offal pits, the latrine rows.
Like peeling back the orderly facade, down now among the foul rubbish of our leavings. Ah, Fireherr, I am not so blind as to miss the meaning of this journey.
When at last she halted, they were beyond the northeast pickets.
For Spax to make his way to the distant Lethary encampment, he need only strike out northward, angling slightly to the west. He could see the fitful glow from the prince's position.
Like us, they're running out of things to burn.
Abrastel faced east, to where just beyond a ribbon of white bones the glass desert was a sea of sharp, glittering stars, lying as if scattered in death, bathed in emerald light.
The wastelands, she murmured. Highness?
Who won here, Spex?
As we can see, no one won.
And in the glass desert? He squinted.
It hurts the eye, Firehair. Blood was spilled there, I think. Immortal blood.
Would you throw the crime at the feet of humans? He grunted.
Now you split reeds, Highness. It is the willful mind that is nature's enemy, for out of that willfulness comes arrogance
and contempt. Warchief, it seems we will all face a terrible choice then. Are we worth saving? You, me, my children, my people?
Do you now waver in your resolve?
She faced him. Do you? Spax scratched his beard with both hands.
All that Krughava said when she was ousted, I have considered it again and again.
He grimaced.
Now it seems that even Spax of the Gilk can revise his views. A time of miracles, to be sure. I will, I think, choose to see it this way. If nature must win in the end, then let the death of our kind be sweet and slow. So sweet, so slow that we do not even notice. Let us fade and dwindle in our tyranny, from world to continent, from continent to country, from country to city, city to neighborhood, to home, to the ground under our feet, and finally down to the pointless triumphs inside each of our skulls.
These are not the words of a warrior. He heard the harsh emotion in her tone and nodded in the darkness.
If it is true, and the grey helms seek to be the swords of nature's vengeance, then the shield anvil has missed the point. Since when is nature interested in revenge? Look around.
He waved a hand.
The grass grows back where it can. The birds nest where they can. The soil breathes when it can. It just goes on, Highness, the only way it knows how to. With what's left.
The same as us, she said.
Maybe this is what Krughava could see so clearly, and Tanakalian can't. When we war against nature, we war against ourselves. There is no distinction, no dividing line, no enemy. We devour everything in a lust for self-destruction. As if that is intelligence's only gift.
Only curse, you mean? He shrugged.
I suppose there is a gift in being able to see what we're doing even as we do it. And in seeing, we come to understand.
Knowledge we choose not to use, Spex.
I have no answer to that, Firehair. Before our inaction, I am as helpless as the next man. But it may be that we all feel that way. Smart as we are individually, together we become stupid. Appallingly stupid.
He shrugged again.
Even the gods cannot find a way through this. And even if they had, we'd not listen, would we?
I see her face, Spex.
Her face, yes. It's not much of a face, is it? So plain, so lifeless.
Abrastel flinched. Find another word, please.
Bleak, then. But she makes no effort, does she? Nothing regal in her clothes. Not a single item of jewelry. No paint on her face or her lips, and her hair so short, so...
Highness, why does any of that even bother me? But it does, and I don't know why.
Nothing regal, Abrustal mused. If what you say is true, and yes, so it seems to me as well, then why, when I look upon her, do I see, well, something
that I did not see before, or that I did not understand? She ever grows in my mind, this adjunct Tavore.
Noble, he said. She gasped.
Yes. She doesn't fight against nature, does she?
Is it just that? Is that all it is? Spax shook his head.
Highness, you say you keep seeing her face. It is the same for me. I am haunted, and I do not know why. It floats behind my eyes, and I fix upon it again and again, as if I'm waiting. Waiting to see the expression it will assume. That one expression of truth. It's coming. I know it is, and so I look upon her, and I cannot stop looking upon her.
She has made us all lost, Abrustal said. I did not anticipate I would feel so troubled, Spax. It's not in my nature. Like some prophet of old, she has indeed led us out into the wilderness.
Until she leads us home.
Abrustal turned and stepped closer, her eyes glittering.
And will she? In that nobility, Firehair, he replied in a whisper, I find faith against the despair, as did Krughava, and in the adjunct's small hand, like a wispy seed, there is compassion.
He watched her eyes widen, and then her hand was behind his head, pulling him close. One hard kiss, and then she pushed him away.
It's getting cold, she said, setting off for camp. Over a shoulder, she added, You should be able to reach the Lethary before dawn.
Spax stared after her.
Very well. It seems we will do this after all. Hood, the Lord of Death, stood before me and spoke of fear, the fear of the dead. But if the dead know fear, what hope do we have? Tavore, does a god stand in your shadow, ready to offer us a gift for the sacrifices we will make? Is this your secret, the thing that takes away all your fear? Please, lean close and whisper it to me.
But that face, there behind his eyes, might have been as far away as the moon. And if the gods came at last to crowd round her, would they too look down in perilous wonder at that frail magic in the palm of her hand? Would it frighten them?
When it so frightens the rest of us?
He looked out over the glass desert's offering of dead stars.
Tavore, do you now shine bright among them? Just one more of the fallen?
And would there come a time when her bones came crawling to this shore to join all the others? Spax, war chief of the Gilk Bargast, shivered like a child left naked in the night, and the question pursued him as he set out for the Lethary camp. She had always considered the notion of penance to be pathetic self-indulgence. And those that set out upon such a course, choosing isolation and abnegation in some remote cave or weathered hut, were to her mind little more than cowards. The ethics of the world belonged to society, to that fraught maelstrom of relationships where argument and fierce emotions waged eternal war. Yet here she sat, alone beneath a green-limbed sky, with a slumbering horse her only company, and all her private arguments were slowly drifting away, as if she walked through one room after another, leaving ever further behind some regal chamber echoing with raucous debate. The irritation that was futility was finally gone, and in the silence ahead she sensed the gift of peace. Krughava snorted. Perhaps all those hermits and aesthetes were wiser than she had ever suspected. Tanakalian now stood in her place, there at the head of the Grey Helms, and he would lead them where he willed. She had been caught out by the logic of his argument, and, like a wolf brought to bay by hounds, she had found herself assailed as he closed in.
Contradiction.
In the rational realm, the word was a blistering condemnation. Proof of flawed logic. To expose it in an adversary's position was akin to delivering a death blow, and she well recalled the triumphant gleam in his eyes in the instant he struck. But, she wondered now, where was the crime in that most human of capacities, to carry in one's heart a contradiction, to leave it unchallenged, immune to reconciliation? Indeed, to be two people at once, each true to herself, and neither denying the presence of the other. What vast laws of cosmology were broken by this human talent? Did the universe split asunder? Did reality lose its way? No. In fact, it seemed that the only realm wherein contradiction had any power at all was the realm of rational argument. And, Krughava admitted, she had begun to doubt that realm's self-proclaimed virtue. Of course, Tanakalian would argue that her terrible crime had led the Perish Grey Helms into crisis. Upon whose side would they stand? How could they serve more than one master? Will we not fight for the wolves? Will we not fight for the wild? Or shall we commit sacrilege by kneeling before a mere mortal woman? This crisis, Krughava, is of your own making. Or words to that effect. Perhaps it was, at that, of her own making. And yet, within her there had been no conflict, no brewing storm awaiting them. She had chosen to walk at Tavare Paran's side. Together they had crossed half a world, and, Krughava had been certain, at the very end they would have remained side by side, two women against a raging conflagration. In that moment, success or failure would lose all relevance. The triumph was in the stance, in the defiance. Because this is the essence of life itself, human and wild. In that moment, we are all the same. Contradiction, Tanakalian? No, I would show you this final gift. Human and wild, we are the same. I would have shown the wolf gods the truth of this, whether they liked it or not. And this contradiction of yours, Shield Anvil, would have vanished like a puff of smoke. What did I seek in our faith? I sought to mend the impossible crisis that is our worship of the wild, our worship of all that we have left behind and to which we can never return. I sought reconciliation, an acceptance of the brutal contradiction of our human lives. But then the adjunct had rejected her. There was an old saying among the Perish that a room full of women was a knife seller's vision of paradise.
There will be betrayal.
Oh, yes, indeed, betrayal. So unexpected, so hurtful, that Tavare might as well have slit open Krughava's throat, watched her bleed out on the floor of the command tent. And now the mortal sword was lost.
Contradiction. You would choose only the worthy to embrace, Shield Anvil? Then what you do is not an embrace, sir. It is a reward. And if you are to taste the flavor of naught but virtuous souls, how will you ever find the strength to best the flaws within your own soul? Shield Anvil Tanakalian, you are headed into difficult times.
She sat alone, head lowered, her fur cloak drawn tight about her, weapons laid out to one side, hobbled horse behind her.
Ranthurvian, are you there, old friend? You refused his embrace. Your soul is left to wander where it will. Have you walked with me? Can you not hear my prayer? I was betrayed, and then betrayed a second time. If I am cruel, then your untimely death could mark the first of three, and all about me I see contradiction. You were the Destriant. From you comes the voice of our gods, but now the gods can tell us nothing,
for you are silent. The Grey Helms are led by a shield anvil who has elected himself the sole arbiter of righteousness. I avowed service to the adjunct Tavare Paran, only to have her send me away. Nothing is as it seems. Her breath caught. Ice upon the surface of the lake seems solid, and we might slide quickly from place to place. But the ice is thin, and that is the danger, the price of carelessness. Did I not question the contradiction's criminality? She rose and faced the glass desert. Adjunct Tavare, she whispered, have I skidded too sure upon the ice? If I am untroubled by my own contradictions, why do I choose to see yours as a crime, as betrayal? That Gilk war chief, was it he who spoke of Tavare's surrender to despair, her expectation of failure, her desire to spare us the witnessing of that failure? Or was it all nothing more than what she said it was, a tactical necessity? Destriant, old friend, shall it be my own people who become the betrayers? Are we to be the knife that fatally strikes Tavare Paran and her Malazans? Run, Thervian, what must I do? You could ride back to the camp, woman, and slide an arm's length of cold iron through the bastard. She shook her head. The Grey Helms were bound to strict laws and would not permit themselves to be led by a murderer. No, they would execute her. But at least there would be no Tanakalian. Who would take command? Heveth? Lambat? But then, would they not feel bound to their last commander's intentions? Listen to yourself, Krughava, actually considering outright murder of a fellow Grey Helm. No, that was the wrong direction, the wrong path. She would have to leave the perished to whatever fate Tanakalian found for them. But the betrayal, well, that would not be set at her feet. Krughava faced the glass desert. I will ride to her. I will warn her. And I will stand at her side until the very end. All doubt vanished from her mind. She collected up her weapons. See how clear the ice has become, Runthervian. I can see its thickness. Upon this, an entire army could march without fear. Krughava drew a deep breath of cold night air and then turned to her horse. Ah, friend, I have one thing left to ask of you. The Vigaths stood with their heads tilted downward, as if contemplating the lifeless earth at their feet, but Gessler knew it was simply the way they slept, or rather rested, since as far as he could tell, the huge reptilian warriors never closed their eyes. It was unnerving, leading an army like this, like commanding 10,000 hounds. But they're smarter than hounds, which makes it even worse. The wings of Kell hunters remained well beyond the encampment, seemingly immune to the vicissitudes of food, water, and rest. Their endurance made him feel soft, but not as soft as Stormy. Listen to that bastard snore. I can probably hear him over in the Lethary camp. He knew he should be sleeping, but there had been dreams, unpleasant ones, disturbing enough to drag him out from his furs with dawn still two bells away. Now he stood looking upon the massed Vigath legions. They were halted in formation like vast assemblies of brooding statues, grey as dulled iron beneath the uncanny night sky. He had been kneeling as if broken, and the dreamscape surrounding him was a charnel house of torn bodies. The blood had soaked up through his leggings and now thickened against the skin of his knees and shins. Somewhere fire was pouring from the very bedrock and roiling gouts of deadly gases coiled skyward, and in that sky, as he'd looked up, he'd seen something. Clouds? He could not be sure. But there was something monstrous about them, something that ripped like talons into his chest. He'd seen motion, as if the sky itself was heaving. A gate? Could be.
But no gate could be as big as that. It took the whole sky. And why did it feel as if I was to blame for it?
Gessler might have cried out then, enough to rattle him awake. He'd lain beneath the firs, sweat-soaked and shivering. From the nearby ranks of Vegath came a stirring motion, as the flavors of his distress agitated the sleeping Kachain Chimal. Muttering under his breath, he'd risen to his feet. An army encamped without cookfires, without tents or roped pens or the ragged sprawl of followers. It didn't seem proper. In fact, it didn't seem real. The Wiccan cattle dog, Bent, had found him then. Misshapen snout, one clouded eye, the gleam of canines and splintered teeth. He'd never seen so many scars on a single animal. But as the beast drew up, Gessler remembered back to a late afternoon on the Aran Way.
Hunting survivors. And how pathetic was that? Two damned dogs. Among so many corpses, the memory haunts me to this day. Two damned dogs. And then that Trell there on the wagon. All of us on the bed. Me, Stormy, Truth, and that Trell. Willing two dying animals back to life. Truth, he was weeping. But we knew what it was all about. We knew it because we felt it. So many had been taken from us that day. Coltain, Bolt, Lull. Dyker, gods, finding him crucified like that, at the road's end, staked to the last of those ghastly trees. No, we couldn't tell Truth about that. It's what made the name we'd given him sting us so afterwards. We kept it from him, me and Stormy. But that Trell saw through us and was good enough to say nothing. We saved the lives of two dumb dogs, and it was like a new dawn.
He looked down at Bent.
Remember that day, you ugly horror?
The wide head lifted, the motions stretching the torn lips back from the crooked teeth, the misaligned jaw that should have made the dog look comical, but didn't. No, instead, it broke the heart.
All you did in our name. Too loyal for your own good. Too brave to know any different. And still you failed to protect them. Would you have been happier if we'd let you die, freed your spirits to run with the ones you loved? Did we hurt you that day? Me and Stormy and Truth and that Trell? I hear you, he whispered, studying the dog. The way you wince when you get up after another night on cold ground. I see you limping at day's end, Bent. You and me, we're both breaking down. This journey will be the last of us, won't it? You and me, Bent, the last of us. I'll take your side when the time comes, he said. In fact, I will die for you, dog. It's the least I can do.
The promise sounded foolish, and he looked round to make certain no one else was near. Their only company was the other dog, Roach, digging frantically at some mouse hole. Gessler sighed.
But who says my life's worth any more than this dog's, or that its life is worth less than mine? Who stands around measuring these things? The gods? Ah, good one. No, we do, and that's the sorriest joke of all.
Feeling chilled, he shook himself. Bent sat down on his left, yawned with a grinding, grating sound. Gessler grunted.
We've seen a lot, ain't we? All that grey in our muzzles, hey? Aran Way. The sun was hot, but we could barely feel it. Truth brushing the flies from the wounds. We don't like death. It's as simple as that. We don't like it.
He heard soft footpads and turned to see Destriant Kallith approaching. When she settled down on Bent's other side and rested a hand on the beast's head, Gessler flinched, but the dog did not move. He grunted.
Never seen Bent accept that from anybody, Destriant.
South of the Glass Desert, she said, we are soon to enter the homeland of my people. Not my tribes, but our kin. The Elan lived on the plains that enclosed the Glass Desert on three sides. My own clan was to the north.
Then you can't be certain they're all dead, these ones in the south.
She shook her head.
I am. The voice slayers from Kolantz hunted down the last of us. Those that didn't die from the drought, I mean.
Kallis, if you got away, others did too.
I hope not,
she whispered, and she set to massaging the cattle dog, along the shoulders, down the length of the beast's back to the hips, and under her breath she chanted something in her own language. Bent's eyes slowly closed. Gessler watched her, wondering at the meaning of her reply. Whispered like a prayer.
It seems, he muttered after a moment, that us survivors all share the same torment.
She glanced up at him.
That is why you and the Shield Anvil always argue. It's like watching your children die, isn't it?
A clutch of pain inside made him look away.
I don't know why the adjunct wants it this way, but I do know why she's keeping it all inside. She has no choice. Maybe none of us do. We are what we are, and no amount of talking or explaining is going to make a difference to anything.
Bent was lying down now, breathing slow in sleep. Kallith slowly withdrew her hands.
You just took away his pain, didn't you?
She shrugged.
My people kept such animals. As children, we all learned the songs of peace.
Songs of peace, Gessler mused. It'd be nice to hear a few more of those in the world, wouldn't it?
Not any time soon, I fear.
They just found you, didn't they, in their search for people to lead them?
She nodded, straightening.
It wasn't fair, but I'm glad of it, Mortal Sword.
She faced him.
I am, and I am glad of you, and Stormy, and these dogs, even Grub.
But not Sin. No one is glad of Sin. Poor girl, she probably knows it too. Sin lost her brother, he said, but she might have been unhinged long before that. She was caught in a rebellion.
He glanced down at Bent.
No one came through it unscarred.
As you said, the curse of surviving.
Making us no different from the Kachain Chimal, he observed. I'm surprised it took them so long to realize it.
Ganth Mac's mother realized it, and for that she was deemed insane. If we do not fight together, we end up fighting each other. She died before she could witness the fruits of her vision. She died believing she had failed.
Kallis, the winged assassin, Gurul, does it remain guarding us?
She looked skyward, eyes narrowing at the jade strangers.
I sent the Shigal to scout our approach.
Into Kolantz? Isn't that risky?
She shrugged.
In truth, Gurul serves Gunt's Mac. It is by her command that she releases him to us. This time, however, the matron and I agreed. Mortal Sword, from the visions Gurul has given me, I do not think the Grey Helms accept your command.
Gessler snorted.
Pious boars! I'm glad of that, truth be told. Oh, Krukhava looked to be capable and all that. But I tell you, all that wolf-worshipping made me uneasy.
Noting her raised brow, he shrugged and said,
I went and picked my own god of war, so it's a bit much to be going on about the Perish. The thing is, Kallis, it makes sense for a soldier to choose a god of war. It doesn't make sense when a god of war makes soldiers of an entire people. It's the wrong way round, right? Well, there's something skewed about it, though I can't really tell you why I feel that way.
So they are free to do as they please?
I suppose so. I don't know much about this Tanakalian, except that he'd have done well in the Malazan court, if there's any truth to the story of how he usurped Krugava. People like that, Kallis, I don't trust. It's what got me in so much trouble all those years ago. Anyway, if Tanakalian wants to take his Perish right up the arsehole of the Forkral Asael, well, he's welcome to light his own torch and go to it.
What are your thoughts on the Lethary Prince, Mortal Sword?
Him I like. Aranict, too. Solid people, those two. From what I heard back in Lethary, before his brother took the throne, Bryce was some kind of special bodyguard to the Lethary Emperor. unmatched with a sword. That tells me more about him than you think.
In what way?
Anyone who has mastered a weapon, truly mastered it, is a humble man or woman. More than that, I know how he thinks and something of what he sees, the way his brain works. And it seems that making him a prince hasn't changed him any. So, Calith, worry not about the lethargy. Come the day, they'll be there.
Leaving only the Balkando.
She defers to Bryce, I think. She doesn't want to, but that's just how it is. Besides, Gessler added, she has red hair.
Calith frowned. I don't understand.
Me and Stormy were Falari. Plenty of red-haired people in Falar. So, I'll tell you what a Brastel is like. Deadly temper, glowing hot iron. But being a mother, she's learned the wisdom of knowing what's in her control and what isn't. She doesn't like it, but she lives with it. Likes her sex, too, but prone to jealousy. And all of that bluster, why, it's all for show. Inside, she's just looking for a man like me. She gasped.
But she's married, and to a king.
Gessler grinned. Was just seeing if you were still listening, Destriant. Saw your attention drifting there.
A hunter found me. You're closed off and Stormy is sleeping. A rider was seen, out from close to the Perish camp, riding into the glass desert.
Any more detail than that?
You can see what the hunter saw, mortal sword.
Right, I can, can't I?
He concentrated for a moment, and then swore under his breath.
Krughava.
Where?
To the adjunct, I'd wager. But she'll never make it.
What should we do?
Gessler scratched his jaw and then wheeled round.
Stormy, wake up, you fat bearded ox!